Energy Stew with Peter Roth, Thursdays at 8:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on the Progressive Radio Network.
Welcome to Energy Stew. This is Peter Roth, your host, and we're going to be inspired in the show. Are you living an inspired life? Are you ready to live an inspired life? And we have an opportunity here to do a better job at it. We all want to do a better job at inspiration so we can be more aspired. In order to do that, there's a great book that I've been reading, have read, called The Inspired Life. It's inspirational. And to help us talk about inspiration, I have one of the authors of The Inspired Life on the air with us, Susan Reeve. Susan, welcome.
Hi, nice to be with you, Peter. I am inspired.
I hope so, after all. If you're not inspired, who would be?
Exactly.
So it's very important. I have people coming to me all the time asking me what they should be doing in their lives, what to do next. And I look at them and I go, well, what is your heart telling you? And, you know, what can you do to get behind something? I can't just give you inspiration. I can only assist your inspiration. And so that to me is what this book is about. It's helpful because it helps you look at the different ways that we interfere with our inspiration.
Exactly. And I think that one of the things that you said that's so important is you said that people come to you and they ask you what they should do. And I think the actual question is, once you have a vision that makes your heart sing or something that ignites your passion, I think the first question is, who do I have to be in order to fully live into that vision?
Right, although just having that vision is a pretty good start. A lot of people don't have that.
And so when you don't have the vision, a place to start is with, well, what don't you want in your life? Because sometimes by starting with what we don't want, we can begin to then say, okay, so if that situation wasn't in your life, if that problem wasn't in your life, then what might your life look like?
I like that question because it really helps. So many people can't get around that to start off with. They look at limitation and they don't know where to go next. But if we can make believe that those limitations aren't there, then who would we be and what would we want without them? And maybe there's a new self inside one to open up, even if it's a dream.
With uncertainty. I work with so many clients who say, just as the people who you work with say, you know, I don't know what I want to do next. I don't know what it is. I don't know what my vision is. I don't know what my goal is. And so you start with where they are. Okay, so you don't know. Well, what if you did know? What do you like doing? What if you knew you could not fail? So approaching this with a sense of humor, as well as I say to so many of my clients, okay, so let's take the next month, 3 months, 6 months, the next year, whatever period of time feels right for you, and call this time an exploration instead of calling it an I don't know time.
Right, and that's the value of having tools like somebody to talk to about it who understands the process, or reading a book that goes through it with all of the different interferences that come into our lives and ways of clearing things out. And also, in your book, there's a lot of of add-ons. What can you do to inspire yourself more?
Exactly. And, you know, we've really focused in creating this book to give some very concrete, simple steps for people to use in their life. And we're writing about how do we unleash, how do we tap in to the potential of our mind in order to live the life that we want. And so that really means that we have to take a look at what our thoughts are. And do our thoughts support the life we want, or do they not support the life we want, with no judgments about it? You know, I think of it oftentimes as this is a software upgrade. And most of us are not aware of the software that's, are not consciously aware of the software that's running us.
Right. Many people live in negative language.
Exactly, as if that's their only choice, as though the self-talk that's going through their mind is truth, is a factual statement about them. When what it is it's a thought, it's an idea, and thoughts are made up, and we get to choose. I mean, this is what I think is really the revolutionary idea in terms of a paradigm shift. We get to make up and choose our thoughts. And when we connect with our heart, which is, you mentioned a little while earlier, when we connect to our heart and learn to listen to the voice of our heart, we hear magnificent guidance.
But sometimes we have to know how to listen and how to understand the mechanics of our minds to use perspective. And there's so much in the book on different ways of looking at that. There's a part that has to do with our expectations and our even hidden expectations. What is it that we, you know, expect to go wrong, for instance?
Right.
And what are our expectations that we can we should give up on because they're actually driving us away from being open-minded. You know, we create closed-mindedness from our expectations.
And so we have expectations about the way things should unfold or the way things should occur. And one of the dangers of expectations is that they create blinders for us so that we don't get to see if another possibility presents itself.
Well, it's interesting. I want to just tell you a quick story.
Sure.
This happened 32 years ago when I was looking for a life partner, and I was very discouraged at that point. I had been in too many false, on too many false leads, too many of my relationships hadn't worked out, and it just didn't look like there was any opportunity that I could imagine happening. And I had to say to myself, okay, I have to be all right anyway without seeing a result. And I don't know, I'm going to make my life okay. It's all right. I would love to have a partner in life, but it's all right if I don't. So I think I'll go out for a run in the park. And I went out the door with my running shoes, and I must have run maybe 100 yards, and this nice-looking woman was running by in the same direction I was going. And I started talking with her, and within a quarter mile, I knew I was with my life partner. And we've been together now for 32 years.
Yeah, there's nothing like creating the spaciousness of letting go to our attachment to the expectation.
Right. Because it's a pressure and it's a weight on us, and it doesn't come across well in life. The energies around it aren't happy.
Yeah, and there's not an openness to it. I mean, I had a similar experience in writing this book. I had a deadline, and it just wasn't happening. Between the time I wrote the book proposal and the time I sat down to write the book, some of my ideas had evolved, but I didn't have the new language yet. And I'd sit down day after day, and I would go over the three chapters that I handed in with the proposal. So those chapters were edited repeatedly. And then one day I sat down, I was meditating, and I said, if I don't complete this, it really doesn't mean anything about my worthiness, whether or not I'm responsible. All it means is this is a project that I didn't complete. I, you know, only got so far. And I felt this sense of surrender and relief, and I sat down the next day and wrote the bulk of the book in 2 months.
You know, that reminds me of another kind of story like that is I was writing a book about 35 years ago, a running book on where to run in different parts of America. And I was out in Minneapolis and running with two of the top runners in America on a workout. And I'm not of that caliber of a runner. But they were taking me through the woods along the Mississippi, and it was very interesting. But I was getting totally exhausted, but I didn't want to look bad because I was running, you know, I wanted to show that I was a serious runner. And finally, I just had to say to these two guys, I had to say, I just can't keep up with you. I'm going to hang back. And I hung back. I just dropped back. And because I was able to surrender and not worry about it, I regained my strength and I caught up with them.
Yeah, because of all of the energy that was going into the worry. You're reminding me of just a short story. Years ago when I was living in Manhattan, and it was the first year that there was there was an event to raise money for Central Park. It was called You Gotta Have Park. And I wasn't a runner, but I loved Central Park. That's where I had spent Sunday mornings with my dad when I was a kid. And I started running with friends, and it was really clear about an eighth of a mile off the starting line, I was not going to be able to stay up with them. So they went ahead, and all I was thinking about is, I'm the only one who's running alone. I'm not going to be able to do this. And at some point, I realized all of my energy was going towards what I was not going to accomplish. So I looked up at the trees. It was a beautiful spring day, and I said to the trees, I decided I would talk to the trees. And I started talking to the trees, and that worked for about 5 seconds. And I just said, okay, trees, tell me what to do. And I started barely walking, and I came up to a woman, and I turned around to her and said, is it okay if I run with you? And she said, yes. And I turned around and looked at her and said, what's your name? And she said, my name is Fern. I'm from Riverdale. And I felt as though I was talking to a live tree. But that support of that noticing that when we are focusing on what we don't want, when we focus on the problem, yes, it's a value to be able to identify a problem or an obstacle on our path. But once we identify it, it's not necessary to then deepen our relationship with the problem.
Right. That's great. And it's so helpful along our paths to remember these kinds of stories, so we can keep on surrendering.
Yeah, they're like our personal fairy tales.
Yeah.
Which can guide us, and fairy tales really being the stories of the journey of our souls.
They're very helpful. Now, the book has so many ways that it supports us. One of the chapters is about addictions. And I like that because most people think of addictions as big, bad problems in our lives, and for many people there are, but for many people it's the little addictions that get in our way, the ways that we interfere with our progress every day by having different ablutions that that we need to address, or just different ways that we slow our lives down in not positive ways.
Yeah, and also the thoughts that we're addicted to, the habits of thoughts that we're addicted to. When we can't stop arguing with people, you know, kind of, then we're addicted to our opinions and our judgments. When we can't end that that self-deprecating internal dialogue, we're addicted to self-abuse. And I really see that kind of internal dialogue where we are judging ourselves and we're never enough and we're calling ourselves stupid and nobody's ever going to love me and nothing's ever going to work out for me. I've begun to see that as a form of domestic violence, that we're the perpetrators of this message that we feed ourselves that we're not good enough.
Well, often those are a result of domestic violence from childhood.
Yes, absolutely. They're a result of both horrific experiences we have or how we have interpreted the circumstances of our life. In my story, when I was 3 years old, my mom had to go into the hospital for an operation, and my parents decided that it best for me to stay with my grandparents who loved and adored me. But I'd never been away from my family before. And so I experienced that separation as this enormous trauma. And the meaning that I made out of it is that I wasn't loved and that I was bad.
And I read in the book about that it lasted for many years.
It lasted for decades because that software, those beliefs that are installed when we're very young, they're really not installed in a language. They're installed in a feeling that we feel, and it operates seamlessly.
Right, and so, when you get older, then you keep on repeating that in different ways, that you see it in yourself, that it's an imaginative thing. It's an illusion that you interpret something as meaning that you're not good enough and not loved.
Exactly. I worked with a client yesterday who had experiences when she was a young child about being rejected and abandoned. And she's now in her 50s, has applied to a graduate program in writing, and she hasn't heard from the school yet, and she's convinced that she's going to be rejected. And it really, in our work together, it was clear that when she's connected with that adult part of herself in this deeper, wider center where she feels confident, she can speak about the application that she sent in and the 30-page story that she wrote with great confidence. But she can't maintain that because this younger self of hers, who's used to being rejected, pops up in her mind and says to her, "Who are you kidding? This isn't going to work for you."
So how does she overcome that?
And so that's some of the work that we're doing. One of the things that she does is she has a list of statements that she can say when those old thoughts pop into her mind. So that's one level of it. The deeper level of it, and the work that she and I are doing together, is that she's embracing that younger part of herself that felt rejected by her parents when she was a child. But over the years, she has also rejected that part of herself. She's wanted to get rid of that part of herself. So I do visualization work with her to connect with that younger part of herself so that that part that was traumatized can become integrated into the adult who she is today.
Well, that's great to have that process. Now, let's come back to how you are inspiring people in your book. And one of the things that comes up is a vision board.
Yes. So a vision board is, and this is for people who, whether you are clear about what your vision is or you're unclear about what your goal is, a vision board is something you can make. You can take magazines, greeting cards that you got, newspaper articles, any sentences from books that you have, and just start, come to a centered place, focus on your breath, and allow yourself to just begin to cut out images that have meaning to you. And then put them on the board, on a board. And there can also be statements there. And what I encourage people to do is to make sure that they put a picture of themselves on their board as well. And then you spend time each day stepping in to that experience that you have on your vision board. So you are embodying the thoughts and the feelings as though that result is already accomplished in your life.
Right. It's so good to put down on paper or on a board what your interests are. Even the journey to get there, the search for things to put on your vision board can open up new pathways for you.
Particularly when you approach it from a very open place, that there's no way you can make a mistake, that you begin to trust your sense that this picture resonates with me. Oh, I like the way that statement has meaning to me. Don't then be concerned about where am I going to place it on the board. First, generate the images and the words that have meaning to you.
Right, and that creates a new language in your mind.
Yeah, it's like allow yourself to be that child who follows your impulse. The impulse, in this case, focused on if you knew you could not fail, who would you be and what would you be doing?
That's great. And also, you talk about a pleasure list.
Yes, I love that one. A pleasure list, and it's best to write the pleasure list when you are feeling calm and quiet. And a pleasure list is a list of the people, places, things, and activities that bring you pleasure. So that when you find that you are in the midst of some drama or feeling victimized by the circumstances of your life, and it can be as simple as you're sitting in your car in traffic, or you're on a subway that's not moving and you can't hear the announcement clearly, or it can be when you're facing a bigger life challenges. You've been laid off from your job. Is that when you notice that you are caught up in that tangled web of misery, focus your attention on something on your list. Like, even as I say this to you, my mouth is actually watering because I have kept a phone message on my voicemail from my grandkids for almost a year to hear the sound of their voices every so often. And so just now, as I was describing the pleasure list, their voices are something that brings me pleasure. And so I was hearing their voices in my mind. And so what we do is we're faced with a challenge. We can feel fear, worry, anxiety building up within our bodies. We notice it. We acknowledge that I'm feeling fearful. I'm feeling anxious. I'm feeling worried. Then focus on an item on your pleasure list. Not to repress the problem, rather to bring yourself back to a centered place where you have access to more resources in your thinking and in your experience. And from that place, then focus on, okay, what result do I want in this situation?
And I think a pleasure list could also have memories of wonderful events in one's life.
Absolutely. Only if those memories aren't going to bring you a sense of regret when you think of them.
No, I'm talking about pleasure.
Yes. Yes. Unfortunately, some people start thinking about good memories and then feel bad that that isn't what's going on right now.
Right. Well, that's true. But that's the point, is that you're doing that to change your mood.
Exactly. Exactly. And so you draw from your own experience of knowing what brings you a sense of pleasure.
years ago, there was a book written, over 100 years ago, actually, by a woman named Annie Besant, and it was a book called The Spiritual Life. And in it, she says, no matter how advanced you think you are, you're going to be in the dark, in dark nights. And the only and you're not allowed a flashlight when you're in those places, but you can certainly have the memory of light.
Yeah, and I think that's so important because so many people want to arrive someplace and think, once I get there, I'm never going to be upset again. I'm going to feel loved every single moment. This old pattern of rejection or abandonment of trauma will never repeat. But we live in an expanding universe, and our capacity to give and receive love is always expanding. And so this is a muscle. This is a point of view that needs to be nourished on a daily basis. And facing obstacles, having an old pattern resurface, is not proof that we haven't evolved. It's just an opportunity to further expand our ability to give and receive love.
Right. And so it's important to have these tools of awareness about the process, and when we get stuck in it, to be able to dig ourselves out in some form that works for us. And that's why your book, The Inspired Life, is so helpful, because it has a lot of tools in it. And it has a chapter about gratitude, a chapter about maintaining consistency. It's very important to stay on purpose, even if we feel like we're overwhelmed by detours. We can still hold our purpose.
Absolutely. And the detours, in a sense, give us the opportunity to strengthen our commitment to our purpose,
and they might lead us in new interesting directions.
Exactly. We can think about an obstacle in the road as it can be a lookout point. We can stop for a moment and say, okay, let me survey the territory. Maybe the path I was taking for my goal isn't the best path for me to take. Maybe there's another doorway I can go through. But that
right.
doesn't mean I need to give up on my North Star completely.
Right. And there is, we don't have time now, but there is a nice approach to our, having our North Star. And so we have less than a minute, actually. And Susan Reeve, you're a co-author of The Inspired Life. How can people get the book or find out more about you and whatever?
Well, they can go to my website, which is susanreeve.com. And my first name has an unusual spelling, S-U-S-Y-N-R-E-E-V as in Victor, E.com. And I'd love people to join us because we are launching the Inspiration Nation on 11-11-11, and we'll have many resources and tools available for people to commit to living their inspired life.
It sounds so great. Susan, thank you so much for being a guest on Energy Stew.
Thank you so much, Peter, for this opportunity.
And all the best with your book.
Thank you very much. Have an inspired day.
You too.
And life.
You too.
Bye-bye.
Bye. And this is Peter Roth, your host of Energy Stew at Progressive Radio Network. And I can be reached at Peter at HeartRiver, HEART, river.org. And thank you so much for listening.